south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Now, here's something that'll blow your mind. Driving out in the boonies the other day, crossing the border between Guatemala and Salvador, I see a big roadblock. There's cops all over the place. They're pulling over trucks. And since the roadblock just happened to be about a block away from a bunch of little tiendas selling pineapples and coconuts and all that, I pulled over, bought two coconuts for 30 cents apiece, and I watched the lady selling the coconuts use her machete to cut a flat spot on the bottom and a flat spot on the top. The first cut is so that the coconut will sit flat on a countertop. The second cut she made on the top would be where you poke your straw through so you could start slurping. And if you don't know it already, fresh, cool coconut water right out of the coconut is the most refreshing drink in the world. Screw that pasteurized stuff in a bottle you get from Whole Foods. I'm talking about the real thing right off the tree here. Anyway, I moseyed on over to the police roadblock, and I noticed they were pulling over trucks to see if their headlights and brake lights worked. And for a second, I thought maybe I was in a parallel Latin universe, because I've never seen that done before. You can drive around day and night in Latin America and not have a single light working, and the cops just don't care. And oddly enough, and this is crazy, often owners of very beat-up old pickup trucks and tractor trailers even will decide it's too much trouble to fix those taillights, or maybe they've had them crashed into too many times, so they'll actually have them bondoed over and painted, and then it appears as if no lights were ever installed in the vehicle at all. It's the kind of illusion that makes you do a double take. Imagine a car or truck up north with no taillights or taillight housing assemblies at all. Kind of an oddly smooth, naked rear end look. And you're wondering, why in the hell would that idiot spend all the time and effort to bondo in the place where there should be a taillight housing assembly? You know, screw everything else that's wrong with the car, like the busted windshield, those bald tires with the radial belts shredding out, and that broken trunk latch that's being held down by a bungee cord. No, that stuff's not important, right? Well, you're in the third world now, bub, so anything goes. Anyway, it's daytime and the cops are pulling over trucks, and it's a first. They're actually checking out to see if the headlights and taillights are working. In 26 years, I've never seen that done before. In fact, I've never seen the cops do any kind of safety check. Not off the Gringo tourist trail, anyway. So, after I slapped myself a few times to see if I was dreaming, I noticed the cops had no ticket books. They weren't giving tickets or warnings. But get this, handing out half-foot-long strips of reflective stickers to paste on the back of those trucks that had no working taillights. Now, that makes sense, right? You pull a truck over, you don't scold them or give them a ticket. They don't say, you idiot, you're putting yourself and everybody else at risk. Instead, they hand out free reflective stickers. So I said to one of the cops, whose great idea was this? And guess what? It's those first world do-gooders again. Turns out, this guy says, that wonderful first world conglomerate you've all heard of, 3M, has donated hundreds and hundreds of spools of reflective stickers, and they're giving them out to various Latin country police departments. And he said proudly, every day for the past week, his little crew had been given 300 feet of that tape to disperse at that roadblock. So then you might ask, how long will 300 feet of that stuff last? A 300-foot roll, he said, would serve about 150 trucks, though he said by 2 or 3 in the afternoon, they'd always run out. So then, are you getting this? They give that stuff out to 150 trucks a day at that one stop, and it's still not enough? So that means on that road alone, more than 150 trucks a day pass by with non-working or broken-out taillights. Now, that's a real confidence builder for expat gringos who plan on driving here, right? Oh, and by the way, if you think down here in Latin America they've got some kind of Gestapo state trooper system like they have in some of the states up north, well, I can assure you, when you're south of Mexico anyway, you're not in Cleveland or Kansas anymore. So as for the rules of the road, yes, they've got them all just like up in the first world. They've adapted the first world playbook, all right, but the cops don't even know or abide by their own rules. Now, when I say Latin transit cops and the national cops in Latin America are not anything like hard-ass first-world state troopers. I have to qualify that statement by excluding Mexico. Yeah, they've got some real badass crooked cops in Mexico Lindo. You get stopped there, you're lucky if they're just asking for a bribe. In fact, from what I've been hearing lately, if you're a gringo and you get pulled over, or you're driving a car in from the States, with those gringo license plates, you are a mark. You're likely to get pulled over a half dozen times or more each time being asked for a bribe. And they're not hitting you up for Latin prices either, it's gringo prices all the way. Turns out, a $20 bribe to a cop in Honduras is a $150 bribe to a cop in Mexico. And the most common reason to hit you up? Well, something's wrong with your car's paperwork, of course. And what do you know? It's in Spanish. And of course, your papers will be 100% correct, because how'd you get through the border in the first place? But what are you going to do? Argue with a cop? In fact, a while ago, a gringo expat friend of mine who brought a car down from California had this to say. If you want to avoid getting pulled over by Mexican cops, when you're driving down, try to spot a car with a U.S. plate on it. Colorado, Ohio, whatever. That won't be hard. There's big business in bringing down used U.S. wrecks to repair and sell in Latin America. Find one of those guys and stay right behind him. Yep, you'll hit a number of the usual Latin roadblocks. And if they're pulling over gringos, he's the first guy they'll pick out of the crowd, not you. And like my gringo friend said, the only problem with that plan is once that guy's been nabbed and pulled over and you whiz on by. Now you got to find another car with a gringo plate to buffer the way for you till you get to the next checkpoint. So anyway, he says there are plenty of cars coming down from the States. Lots of U.S. plates when you're driving through Mexico. So you can play that game all day long. Another tip, stay on the busy streets. Mostly on the Pan-American Highway if you can. Because if you get pulled over at a roadblock there, though they'll probably hit you up for some kind of bribe, they won't try anything really nasty or evil like they might do out in the boonies when you're all alone. I'm sure you've heard the stories and I've mentioned them in past shows. When isolated out in the boonies, there's a fair chance the cop might take your cell phone, speed dial some of the names on your call list, and ask for extortion money. Remember, unlike the rest of Latin America, there are a lot of bad hombres in Mexico that can speak a little English. Anyway, that's a cop scam that's big business in Mexico. Besides the fact that bad cops that have pulled you over and hit you for a bribe will often call ahead to their buddies in the next district and they'll do the same. However, things change drastically as you go south into countries like Belize and Guatemala and Salvador, Nicaragua, etc. It's not that you just don't see that kind of stuff going on with cops. It's just that somehow there's a complete change in the attitude of the cops once you hit the Mexican southern border. It's like night and day, the cops seem to be actually pretty nice guys. Sure, they're lazy-ass slugs with no motivation, but they haven't got any gas either. Which certainly has a lot to do with their lack of attitude. So they're a lot more friendly and much less threatening. Not to mention your gringo advantage is starting to kick in again. And suddenly you're again kind of a minor celebrity because gringos are rarely seen south of the Mexican border. Except in the usual gringo haunts like the Keys of Belize, Costa Rica, Panama, and where cruise ships land. Okay, changing gears a bit now. Lately, people are asking about leasing cars in Latin America. You know, long term. Well, you know, first world lag time strikes again, and I've yet to see any kind of advertisement at all about car leases. Not the way they do it up in the States, anyway. So when you think about it, car leasing kind of came into its own, what now, maybe 20, 25 years ago? Up in the States, that is. Yet, down here in Latin America, it hasn't arrived. And you know, if you think about it, you can understand why. That's because Latins do not take care of anything. They lean on cars, sit on hoods, bang doors in parking lots, don't change the oil, run the tires till they're bald. Meaning, after 2 or 3 years, even a new car looks like crap. Now, what I have noticed is some new car dealers are offering certain incentives, like, for example, a year of free scheduled maintenance. You know, oil change, 5, 10, 15,000 regular scheduled checkups and stuff. So I've seen those as new car buying incentives, which means people are bringing them in and getting that stuff done for free for the first year, right? Well, wrong. They still don't bring them in, even though those checkups and oil changes are free. I talked to a guy at a Toyota dealership and he said, it's not a culture where people are used to planned maintenance. It's something they'll have to learn. Oh, and by the way, the most important maintenance checkup for your car is at that 5,000 kilometer mark. And why is that? 90% of all the problems and manufacturing defects that might happen with a new car reveal themselves in the first 5,000 kilometers or 3,000 miles. But you knew that already, right? Okay, let's change gears a little bit and talk about the Altiplano region. Now, remember, I mentioned that about 5% or less of Latin America is called the Altiplano. And by the way, that's where long-term expats most prefer to live. The problem is most of us never find out about it till we put roots down in a place that we find out later is unbearably hot. I'm sure by now you know why. Almost all expats at first end up by the beach or some kind of very hot, humid tourist town they were drawn to by friends who'd visited the place before and exclaimed it was a paradise. In fact, that's the typical way people find out about Costa Rica. Because you see, when it comes to investigating Latin America, gringos don't travel much. They'll fly down to a place like Cancun or Costa Rica, and they keep going back, never discovering much outside that area, and then they end up buying a beach house, a condo, retirement home, or whatever, and settle there. In fact, most long-time expat gringos living in Costa Rica have never been to countries like Honduras or Guatemala or Salvador, and they're all just a couple hours' drive away. So, as it turns out, most gringos really never do find the Altiplano. So they come down to a popular tropical spot and end up living their lives either sucking down beers in a hammock or with constant air conditioning, or if they can't deal with the high electric bill, more probably with a permanent coat of sweat on their bodies and the ever-present ring around the collar and ring around the armpits. Sexy, huh? Or with some luck, you might have stumbled into the Altiplano before you made a big investment elsewhere, like Costa Rica, Belize, or Panama. Yep. When you hit the Altiplano, you find out the weather is a revelation. What? The weather's perfect all the time? So close to the equator? How could that be? Yep, that's the way it is. However, there are really two kinds of Altiplano regions. There's that small Altiplano region in Central America that basically starts in Costa Rica in fits and starts and ends up, believe it or not, in the Distrito Federal in Mexico. That would be Mexico City. Yes, Mexico City's got the perfect Altiplano. It ranges from about 5 to 7,000 feet, so it has perfect spring weather, and that's why it was selected by the Aztecs a thousand or so years ago as the perfect place to build a major city. And by the way, Guadalajara is in the perfect Altiplano too, at about 5,000 feet above sea level. And there are quite a few more cities like that in Mexico, but again, you know how I feel about Mexico. The fact is, if I won a mansion in a Mexican lottery, first thing I'd do, sell it, and move south of the border, south of the Mexican border, that is. But talking about the Altiplano in Central America now, that would be less than 5% of the landmass and only a handful of big cities. Yes, there are a lot of very small towns in the Altiplano, but most gringos want to live near a big city. Now, naming off a few of those cities, we could start with San Jose, Costa Rica. Right on the lower fringe of the Altiplano, that would be about 3,000 to 3,700 feet above sea level. Not quite perfect spring weather all the time, but close. Then you got places like Guatemala City, Antigua, Guatemala, the Lake Atitlan region in Guatemala, an area called Quetzaltenango in Guatemala, whose major city is called Chela, XCLA, that's about 7,000 feet above sea level, with perfect Altiplano weather, if not a bit cool for some gringos. Then, moving on, the capital of Honduras, Tegucigalpa, which is on the lower edge of the Altiplano too, at about 3,200 to 3,500 feet above sea level, with weather just about like San Jose, Costa Rica. By the way, Tegucigalpa is a city I wouldn't live in if I won a mansion in a lottery and they threw in Sofia Vergara too. Yep, it's that much of a rat hole. No redeeming values whatsoever. However, I hear it's an excellent place to get full-body gang tats. Yep, some real ink artists in Tegucy. By the way, there's no Altiplano in Belize. To me, a miserably hot country unless you are laying in a hammock sucking down beers. However, if you fall off and land on your face, you'll have to fly to Mexico or Guatemala to get your nose fixed. You know what they say, a nice place to visit, but... Anyway, in Nicaragua, nothing quite high enough to be called Altiplano. And the little country of El Salvador, no towns or cities reaching the Altiplano either. Even though the capital, San Salvador, 2,500 feet above sea level, that's not really Altiplano. Still very hot. And though some may say Boquete, Panama is the only Altiplano region in that country, the fact is it's kind of on the side of a mountain. It's not a plain. Altiplano means high plains. Though since it is around 3,500 to 4,000 feet above sea level, you do get that Altiplano weather. However, you also get a small town that's surrounded by nothing but gringos, which puts you dead smack on the gringo tourist trail. Meaning, unlike the rest of Latin America, it ain't cheap. So if you just love hanging with gringos and don't much care about absorbing the local culture, Boquete could just be for you. Okay, so I named a half a dozen or so cities in the Central American Altiplano. Now, of course, there are lots of Altiplano cities in South America. You got Medellin at perfect Altiplano level, 5,000 feet. Cali at 3,000 feet is just at the lower end of the Altiplano, so it can get hot, but not sweltering. And Bogota, well, that's up at around 9,000 feet, so it can get cold. Then you've got that real nosebleeder, La Paz, Bolivia, 12,000 feet above sea level, so you're going to feel it, and at first you'll be out of breath a lot of the time. Besides that, it gets damn cold and sometimes snows. Then you've got Quito, Ecuador at around 9,500 feet above sea level, very cold, hard to breathe too. So yes, many South American cities in the Altiplano, you have to be in pretty good physical shape to be able to handle it. In fact, anything over around 7,500 to 8,000 feet above sea level, and typical American gringos do huff and puff. They feel it. And a favorite of some gringos, Cochabamba, Bolivia, which is also around 8,500 feet above sea level. Pretty cold, too. Then you got Arequipa, Peru, which is another gringo hotspot at 8,000 feet above sea level. I wouldn't want to live there. Too cold. And by the way, if you're above 7,000 feet above sea level, you're going to need some kind of heating, space heaters, whatever, unless you don't mind occasionally shivering yourself to sleep at night. So yes, South America does have its Altiplano, but except for a few special cases, their cities and towns in the Altiplano are much higher than their counterparts in Central America. That's why you'll often see locals wearing heavy clothing that we might just wear up north in the winter. Yeah, well, you know, it is a strange phenomenon. When you're up that high, the atmosphere is thinner, you're closer to the equator, so the sun is much more intense than it ever was in Dubuque or Cleveland. So, when the sun's shining directly on your skin, you'll feel nice and warm. Great, in fact. However, as soon as you walk into the shade, it doesn't take long for you to feel the chill and even get goosebumps. So gringos in the sun will often say it's a little too hot and in the shade a little too cold. Some gringos are always complaining, huh? Even though it's infinitely better than Chicago or Montreal weather, that's for sure. Now, just a little tip here. Me and so many expat gringos that have been down here a long time, we do love the Altiplano wherever it is, but we also like to occasionally slip off to a nice beach town, beach resort, or perhaps we've got our own little beach house. And we don't want to spend a half a day on the road getting there. And so with that in mind, that's why you find so many expat gringos picking their Altiplano place in Central America, because, well, just take a map and look at it. Compared to South America, Central America is a very thin, tapering piece of land, and there really are a lot of places you could drive from the Atlantic to the Pacific and vice versa in just a couple of hours. So you can easily have that Altiplano base camp, and easily pop back and forth to your sun and fun place too. So to repeat, in Central America, you've got your major Altiplano regions around 4 to maybe 6,000 feet above sea level. Perfect spring weather all year round. And in South America, you've got a higher Altiplano generally, from 8,000 to around 12,000 feet above sea level. So the air's thinner and it's much cooler. However, to offset that, there are a lot more Altiplano regions in South America than in Central America. So the Altiplano stretches through Colombia, Peru, Bolivia, Chile, and Argentina. And by the way, most expats do not like the Altiplano in Chile or Argentina because it really is too damn cold. You got all four seasons, so then, well, what are you really escaping from climate-wise if you're coming from Duluth or Cleveland? So, in the end, you've got the low Altiplano and the high Altiplano. Oh, and by the way, if you want to find out what the ideal Altiplano is like, come on down to my Latin American Insider Seminar in January. You'll be smack dab in the most pleasant Altiplano region in all of Latin America. You'll get your boots on the ground all over the place and get to see what it's really like. And since we'll only be from around 5,000 to 6,000 feet above sea level, there'll be no problems at all with breathing or huffing and puffing. Unless, of course, you smoke 2 or 3 packs of cigarettes a day, then do bring your respirator. Oh, and by the way, some very out-of-shape people that have come to some of my previous seminars have said, you know, Johnny, at first when I landed, I thought I'd have some problems. Yes, I did sense the air was a bit thinner. But in the end, it was probably just the adrenaline and the anticipation of the adventure. Who knows? So, to find out more about the seminar, just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's 2016 Latin Seminar. Oh, and by the way, for those of you who've been checking out that website, thenewexpat.com, you'll see John Galt's been running it. He's a guy who attended one of my much earlier Latin Insider seminars. He's been living here in the Altiplano ever since. Now, he's putting together a pre- and a post-seminar trip taking a small number of people by the hand, showing them the ins and outs of the most beautiful lake in the world, Lake Atitlan, Guatemala. Yeah, I know. Your Uncle Harry up in Minnesota has a cabin and a duck blind at the most beautiful lake in the world. I'm telling you, you ain't seen nothing yet. I promise when you get there, it'll be like stepping on another planet. Not to mention with Buona John Galt as your guide, it will be the adventure of a lifetime. So if you are coming down to the seminar, make sure you book another 3 or 4 days either before or after the seminar so you can go on that extra side trip with him. By the way, on that drive, you're going to see 5 or 6 very spectacular volcanoes, some of them active. So if you've never seen a volcano blowing its top, here's your chance. There's really too much stuff to explain on the show right now. So if you want more information about John Galt's special trip, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll pass it on to him and he'll send you the details. Okay, now for an email. This one comes from PT, meaning professional tourist or permanent traveler. Yes, we'll keep his identity secret because this is a bit confidential. Why? Because saying truthful things about Big Brother and such can often put you on somebody's poop list. By the way, if you hear some hammering and drilling and general construction noises, well, there's construction going on. What can I say? Mr. PT starts by saying, I'm back in Mexico again and loving every minute, but don't tell anyone. So, Johnny, your recent podcast on corruption in Ecuador inspired me to write you about some corruption that I've experienced up north that makes Ecuador seem like small potatoes. Now, my normal take on corruption is this. If it doesn't affect me, then who cares? Sure, it's not good, but I have no control over it, except, of course, for that useless vote that we cast every few years. Now, as we know, there's corruption everywhere in North America, from the secret deals in the rooms of the rich and powerful, all the way down to the brown-nosing employee in the workplace who sells his or her colleagues out for some minor perk. But I never thought it would hit so close to home for me. You see, I always thought of Canada as being a cut above many other countries, the Switzerland of North America, so to speak. But over the years of my living here, it seems to me that Canada was gradually taking on many of the characteristics of what people attribute to third world countries. More and more secrecy in government, a greater divide between the rich and poor, housing costs that force people to eat beans and spam for Sunday dinners. You know the signs. But as you know, with us humans, once we have faith in something, it takes a lot to shake that faith, and I still had a naive trust in the system. So here's what happened to me. As you know, in the first world, we're encouraged to set up investment accounts, so that's what I did. I learned a great deal about investments and the different types of risks. Market risk, counterparty risk, currency risk, you name it. But the one risk I never paid much attention to was political risk, because whenever you read about it, the writers would say that it only applied to third world countries. Man, were they wrong. You see, I had put a good chunk of my savings into a particular type of resource investment that was secure and had a high yield. I had investments like this for at least 10 years without problems. And you guessed it, one day without warning, the government announced that they decided to change a rule which affected this particular investment, and overnight, the value of my savings dropped by a third. Ouch! But instead of putting the blame on the government, the paid talking heads in the financial press blamed the investors, saying everyone should have seen it coming and should invest in real estate instruments instead. Now, mind you, this was a year or two before the 2008 real estate crisis. Anyway, this chorus of mainstream press shills was so convincing that I actually wondered if I had indeed missed some obvious clue and should indeed have foreseen the government's precise move. However, when I read an interview in the Financial Post with a fund manager who, wouldn't you know it, managed funds comprised of that exact type of investment, that expert said no one could have seen this move coming. So, Johnny, this combination of government capriciousness and immediate complicity forced me to finally admit, yes, there was great political risk in secure old Canada, and we had unofficially reached the status of third world. We must judge a country by its actions, not its words, you know? But hold on a minute. The story gets worse. You probably know about this, but many of your listeners may not. As part of my investment education, I'd learned the value of diversification, so I decided to open an account in the U.S., with a broker in Chicago called Lind Waldock, who had been around for many years and had a strong reputation. At one point, Lind Waldock was bought out by another broker, but then Lind bought the company back, so I didn't pay much attention. However, A few years later, I saw the note that MF Global had bought out the company. After that, there were no more emails for a few days and everything seemed to be business as usual. But then, I just happened to be listening to a radio show that had Gerald Celente as a guest. He was ranting about how MF Global had cleaned out his account. So I rushed to my computer and logged into my MF Global account to check my statement, and believe it or not, my account balance was zero. Not because I made a bad investment, but because the brokerage itself had taken all my money. And even worse, in the following days, nothing was done. The SEC regulators did nothing, the president did nothing, and the media buried the story. No one was arrested or indicted. Luckily, another company bought out MF Global and over time reversed about two-thirds of my balance. I suppose I should have been more grateful and danced in the streets shouting, "Great, they only took a third of my money and not all of it." Doesn't that type of thinking seem a little bit third world to you? But then again, any dancing I might do wouldn't come close to third world standards. However, this did lead me to reinvent a new word problem for the math textbooks. If you have $10,000 in the bank at 0% interest, how much will you have in 2 weeks? Think about it. Now, Johnny, before I sign off, I'd just like to mention that the politician in Ecuador with the fake degree that you mentioned in a previous show would have a hard time competing with even the Toronto Board of Education, which is the largest public school board in Canada. As you know, with educational institutions, academic integrity is their currency, and they want their leaders to be shining paragons who, no matter what other faults they might have, are squeaky clean in the academic realm. Well, guess what? A few years ago, the head honcho of the Toronto board published an op-ed piece in the largest newspaper in the country that was his own shining display of academic integrity. It was plagiarized. This got officials thinking, and they began to investigate whether his PhD thesis at a local university had been plagiarized as well. So the director quietly stepped down and disappeared, perhaps to write a book. So when I hear about corruption here in Mexico and elsewhere in Latin America, which doesn't affect me or anyone I know, I say, Viva Mexico! And wave off stories of people paying the occasional tiny mordida or bribe to a traffic cop. We have something more precious here, a different type of freedom, and leaders who won't stick their hands into our bank accounts. Oh, and one last thing, a quick warning to your Canadian listeners. Today, Bloomberg published a story titled, Money Flooding Out of Canada at the Fastest Pace in the Developed World. Viva Canada, huh? Keep up the good work, Johnny. Mr. PT.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos!